Erev Tov, everybody. Erev Tov. I'm really very happy that you're all here, and we're going to start a series of shiurim on Pirkei Avot. And I've chosen part of the third parak of Pirkei Avot. I really have no idea how far it will take us or how much we'll be able to cover, but I think there are major ideas in Pirkei Avot that we're going to deal with. You have this sheet here in front of you. You also have an English sheet in front of you. And the purpose of the English sheet just is that you should see the Mishnah, see the translation of the Mishnah. And beginning with Mishnah, and here is something, you can see something fascinating right here. Different Mishnayos have different divisions of the Mishnahs. They're numbered differently. Some Mishnayot are two together, some are one together. So for example, this Mishnah that I want to begin with, Rabbi Yishmael Omer, in this it's Mishnah Yud Bet. In this one it's Mishnah Ted Zion. Don't let it confuse you, but that's exactly what happens in Pirkei Avot. Rabbi Yishmael Omer. So there's a very significant point that I want to establish with the study of this Mishnah, that in a sense is going to be an introduction to one of the things that we are going to look for in Pirkei Avot. Rabbi Yishmael Omer, Yishmael says, "Havi kal l'rosh." Kal really means light. Kal means swift. There's going to be a Mishnah in the fifth perek of Pirkei Avot where Rabbi Yehuda says one should be Az kanomer, mighty like a leopard, kal kanesher, swift and quick like the eagle, lasot to do ritzon, lasot ritzon avicha shabashamayim, that you should do the will of your Father in heaven. That happens to be that Mishnah later on is the opening of Shulchan Aruch Arachayim, that a person has to get up in the morning and go to work doing the will of God, and you have to be strong like Gibor Kari, mighty like a lion, swift like the eagle. Kal means swift. Oh, it's something that's done with a sense of purpose, something that's done with hitlahavut, with a sense of goal and direction. You want to do it. L'rosh. By the way, there will be a number of meanings of L'rosh. There will be a number of meanings of Tishchoret. And we're going to go step by step. Kal L'rosh means that you should be light and swift in serving Rosh, somebody who is greater than you. Somebody who's greater than you. You have to be Noach. Noach means pleasant. L'tishchoret. Tishchoret, according to a number of the Mefarshim, means somebody who is, so to speak, below your station in life. It may be younger, it may be not as intelligent, it may be somebody not as learned. So we have, you know, above me is Rosh, beneath me, the way I look at things anyway, is Tishchoret. Why is Tishchoret somebody who's young? Because he doesn't have gray hair yet. His hair is, there are some people who still have black hair. There are some people that still have hair. And then there are some people that have a lot of white hair. Okay. I say it was always, in my genes. My father, Olav Shalom, was white at 40. I was white not long afterwards. We have pictures in my early 40s that I was white. So you can't blame it on Aliyah, because it all happened before I came on Aliyah. And most probably, if I wouldn't have been white before I came on Aliyah, I certainly would have become white after I did. Anyway, you should be kal l'rosh, easy and swift to serve and do the bidding of somebody who is higher than you. And Noach, you should be pleasant with tishchoda to somebody who is younger than you. You should receive everybody with joy. That's quite a statement, quite a statement. As the Mefarshim point out, this is going a giant step further than the famous statement of Shammai in the first perek in Pirkei Avot, where Shammai says, "Heveni kabel et kol ha'adam, receive every human being, b'sever panim yafot." Sever panim yafot means, you know, with a smile, in a nice way, not grumpy, but besimcha means a great deal more, great deal more than that. Toward, you have to know who Rabbi Yishmael was. We didn't talk yet about Rabbi Yishmael. When does Rabbi Yishmael live? Rabbi Yishmael is going to be the great Bar Plukta of Rabbi Akiva. Following this Mishnah, there are going to be four Mishnayot of Rabbi Akiva that are absolutely foundations of all of Yahadut. And that's why I want to learn them. I'm a mamish, major foundations of principles of Yahadut we have in the four Mishnayot of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva lived at the same time. They were present at the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash. They are both going to be put to death by Rome. Both of them are from the Asara HaRugei Malchus, from the Ten Martyrs. Rabbi Yishmael was a Kohen, Rabbi Yishmael ben Elisha. His Zayde, Rabbi Yishmael ben Elisha, was the Kohen Gadol. The song, how does the song say that one day he went in, Lifnai v'lifnim, and he sees the Rabbeinu Shalom, and the Rabbeinu Shalom asks of him, pray for me that I should show my mercy upon my children. At Simchas, you usually have some little kid with a great voice that sings that story of Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yishmael was everybody mentions Rabbi Yishmael every morning in davening, you know, when at the end of Karbanos in the morning, Rabbi Yishmael, Shloshesrei Midos, the 13 principles by which the Torah is learned, those are the 13 principles that were established and enunciated by Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yishmael lives at an extremely turbulent and difficult period in Jewish history. He's talking about this is the period of Churban, the aftermath of the Churban. He most probably is also present during the period of the Bar Kokhba rebellion that's going to be led by Rabbi Akiva. We're talking about extremely, extremely difficult times for Klal Yisrael. Rabbi Yishmael lost two children during his lifetime. Two sons died during his lifetime. There's a famous Mishnah in the Sechta Nedarim. I remember the first time I can see now Rav Soloveitchik and Ashir once dramatized this Mishnah. It's a Mishnah that's given to drama. There was a fellow who had a niece. She wasn't terribly good looking, and you know there was an inyan at times that an uncle should marry a niece who's poor and needs somebody to take care of her. Wasn't it Mordechai who married his niece Esther? The idea of marrying a niece, but he made a neder, it's Masechta Nedarim, this Mishnah, he made a vow not to have anything to do with her. And Rabbi Shmuel heard about this. So Rabbi Shmuel said, bring the niece, bring her to my house. Anyway, they brought her to his house, and Rabbi Shmuel got his household to work on this girl. They made clothing for her. They did her hair. I don't know, they did her nails. They did a job on her. It was a different girl. He calls in the uncle and he says, did you make a vow about this girl, not to have anything to do with her? He takes a look and he says, oh no. Oh no. So Rabbi Yishmael says, your vow is annulled. Eis vow. Then Rabbi Yishmael, the statement in the Mishnah is that Benos Yisroel Yafel's Hain. The daughters of Israel are beautiful. It's just that poverty and tzaras is that which takes away or hides, covers their real beauty. And then the Bar goes on to say that when Rabbi Yishmael died, or better said, when Rabbi Yishmael was put to death, they said, Bechena Benos Yisrael, daughters of Israel, cried for Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yishmael was the one who was so deeply concerned about Benos Yisrael. Right, so here Rabbi Yishmael says, Kal L'chosh, Norak L'tishchoret, V'adim Ekabel Et Kol Ha'adam B'simcha. One of the things that Mi'at Hashem we're going to talk about in the weeks to come is that I have this in here because I want you to become acquainted with Rabbi Avadia Mibar Tanura. We're going to talk about him. We're going to talk about the Tisis Yantif. We're going to talk about the Tiferet Yisrael. These are the main Meforshim of the Mishnah in the Mishnayos. Rabbi Avadia Mibar Tanura was the first. About 400 years ago, he was born, and maybe the very few years of his early life he lived in a place called Bar Tanura. It's not only a wine made by Kedah. Bar Tanura is the name of a place in northern Italy. And the fact is that most of his life he didn't live in Bar Tanura. From Bar Tanura, I think the family went to Toronto. Right? So you're looking at me? Yes, there's a Taranta in northern Italy. I'm not talking about the one in Canada that didn't exist at the time. The first peoples still inhabited Toronto in those days. And then ultimately, of course, Rabbi Avadia Mibar Tanura came on Aliyah. He was accepted, covered Gadol here in Yerushalayim. And by the way, here in Yerushalayim, we know about Rabbi Avadia Mibar Tanura. You read the wall signs over here? Some of them you shouldn't. Some of them you should. Rabbi Avadia Mibar Tanura is buried on Har HaZeisim, and his yard site is Gimel Sivan. The first of the Shloshes Me'agbalos. There were all sorts of signs all over the city about different events that were taking place. Ali al-Keveh, going up to the Keveh. Rabbi Avadia Mibar Tanura did a job that sort of opened up Mishnayos to Klal Yisrael. They opened it up. The only other Mefarshim that we had before Rabbi Avadia Mibar Tanura, first of all, there's Rashi. We have Rashi on Pirkei Avos. That's in the Pirkei Avos that appears in the Gemara. We have the Rambam. The Rambam wrote a commentary on Mishnah. He started writing the commentary when he was 23 years old. He finished it when he was 28. That alone, the Rambam's commentary on the Mishnah would already be enough to give him a place in the pantheon of the great of Klal Yisrael. But of course he went on from there to write the Mishnah Torah. The Mishnah Torah. And Tshuvas are many. Tshuvas that were written by the Rambam. Anyway, so there's Ofar, Rabbi Avadia Mibar Tanura, there's the Tosis Yontif. The Tosis Yontif is Rabbi Yontif Litman Heller. We will talk about him. And the Tiferes Yisrael was Rabbi Yisrael Lifshitz. Rabbi Yisrael Lifshitz. We'll talk about precisely when they lived and what they did. Okay. Meanwhile, our Mishnah. So Rabbi Yishmael says, have a tal rosh, the noach l'tishchoret, the heveinu kabel kol ha'odah v'simcha. Let's take a look at the Bar Tanura. I want to read the Bar Tanura inside. Yes.
How does that square with the I'm supposed to look at the Rosh Hashanah
in his face? How are you supposed to what?
And how does this heveinu kabel kol ha'odah v'simcha?
So how does that square with the law that you're not supposed to look? I mean, you're not supposed to look at Rasha in the face. You're not supposed to look at the face of Rasha. I'm going to say that I don't have an answer for it yet. How do you like that? She says you're not supposed to look at Pnei Rasha. Say that I have something to say about an allied subject, so I've taken it under advisement. It's a good Takasha. We're going to deal with it. Just Sav La Nut. That's it. Okay. Also, the Stakel B'Shnei Odom Rasha. So she says, V'Havei Metabel Et Kol HaOdom B'Simcha. I mean, literally, V'Havei Metabel Et Kol HaOdom B'Simcha. No, you know, you have to look at him. You have to look at him. All right. The Tiferes Yisrael, before we go to the Rav, the Tiferes Yisrael says that we relate to three kinds of people in our life. We relate to those who are above us, we relate to those who are below us, and we relate to those who are our equals. The three parts in the Mishnah, of course, the first part is how we are supposed to relate to those who are greater than us. The second is how we are supposed to relate to those people who are below our station in life. And then, Adem et Kabel et Kol HaAdam. Hevei kabel et kol ha'odam. Besimcha is the way we are supposed to deal with those who are our equals. By the way, this is going to be intensified. One of the Mishnahs, the second Mishnah in the series of four Mishnayos of Rabbi Akiva, of course, is going to be the famous Mishnah of Choviv Odam Shenivra B'Tzelem. Beloved is man who was created in the image of God. Created in the image of God. And when we get there, we have a great deal to talk about Goyim. There's a great deal to talk about Goyim. How are we supposed to relate to them? This is all going to come. Just hang in there. So the Pharisee Scholar says, if you know how to relate to those who are greater than you, he will, the great man will look upon you as a son. If you know how to relate to people who are below your station in life, he will look up to you as a father. And if you know how to relate to people who are on your level, they will look at you as a brother. Now let's take a look at the Chav. Devi Kaladosh, Lishnei Odom Gadol, Yud Beizu, before a man who was great, Zokain, an elder, the Yoshev Berosh by Yeshiva, and there he is, he sits at the head of the Yeshiva. Havi Kal, you should be light and swift and quick, La'avod Avadato, to do his work, or the Shamesh, the fun of it, to serve before him. V'noach L'tishchoda, you should be easy, you should be pleasant to the young. La'odam Bachur, why is young called Bachur? His hair is still black. You don't have to, in a sense, belittle yourself or be servile toward him. But you have to stand before him pleasantly, respectful. You have to be respectful. Receive everybody the same. Kol Adam, every man besimcha. Neged Kol Adam, as you stand before any person, be he Rosh or be he Tishchodeth, above you, below you, Tamod besimcha, stand with joy. Mekabel, kimo makbil, mitargum neged kavel. Interesting what he is saying over here. Mekabel means standing facing somebody. In Targum, in Aramaic, and we have it in Sefer Daniel a good number of times, neged meaning, or kavel meaning facing somebody. I think why the Rav Avadi Mivar Tanura is telling us this is mekabel does not mean what it may mean in other cases. For example, there's a halacha that says that chayiv adam, a person is obligated lahagbil panei rabo benegel, to go see his rebbe on yontif. It means to go into your rebbe's house and say good yontif to him. That's what. Over here, it doesn't mean that I have to receive everybody into my house. My house is my castle. But anybody whom I stand facing, wherever I may meet him, in the street, in the marketplace, I have to stand before a fellow human being with great joy. Perushacha. Now, so the first pshat, the one that we've been learning exclusively till now, Rosh is one kind of person. Tishchodet is another kind of person. According to the Tiferet Yisrael, Kol Ha'adam is a third kind of person, an equal. Now, there's a second pshat that the Baal Tanura says is, no. Rosh and Tishchodet is all the same person. And you know who the same person is? Me. You know what Rosh means? Rosh means at the beginning of life. You should be swift to do God's bidding. If you will be, you'll train yourself in your youth. Rosh from Reshitcha, your beginning. You will train yourself to do God's service the way you should. Then Noach l'tishchoret, tishchoret over here, meaning not young, but on the contrary, as one's face becomes darkened with age, it will be so much easier for you to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu then. Completely different pshat. Perush Acha, have a kal l'rosh b'nei shitcha, you should be swift to do the service of God in your early part of life, kishata bachur, when you're young, have a kalasos with song barecha. It should be easy for you to do the will of your Creator. Ubizik nutcha. Then, in your old age, kishihushkuru panecha, when your face has become black, nipnei hazikna because of age, tehinoachlo. It's going to be easier for you. If you have to learn how to fulfill mitzvahs in when one is already growing up and getting on in years, it becomes very, very difficult. Okay. There's, of course, one beautiful, beautiful pshat. It's brought by the Medrash Shmuel, and that fits in with the second pshat of the Paratanura. Hevikal Larosh. Hevikal Larosh. I had quoted earlier the famous Mishnah of Rabbi Yehuda, who says you should be Gibor Kari, mighty like a lion, Az Kanamer, strong like the leopard, Kal Kanesha, swift like the eagle, Lasot, Ritzon Avicha Shabbos Shamayim, to do the will of your God in heaven. Larosh, Larosh, Lasot, Ritzon Avicha Shabbos Shamayim. Hevikal Larosh. Rosh means to serve God. It's the letters, Lasot, Ritzon Avicha Shabbos Shamayim. How would you describe this Mishnah? There's a point. Would you describe this Mishnah as a sweet Mishnah, a nice Mishnah, a pleasant Mishnah? Anybody with me over here on this? A practical Mishnah. Practical Mishnah. What other words would you use? I mean, logical?
Okay, logical. All right. In other words, like, really a very nice aphorism. Right? It's a nice word.
No. No. Absolutely not. You know what this Mishnah is? This Mishnah is revolutionary. This Mishnah is a cry of Rabbi Yishmael against the entire Roman Empire. Can you imagine in the Roman Empire saying, had they mitkabela kol ha'adam besimcha, most of the Roman Empire was enslaved. Slavery was rampant. How many free men were there in the world? There was respect for fellow human beings in the Roman Empire. By the way, Rabbi Yishmael is talking about today. How many people are in bondage and in slavery today in the world? How many people have freedom? How many people are looked at as free human beings? What? Well, in Syria, in Egypt, and they're from the better ones. All of Africa, most of Asia. What was all of Russia until 10 years ago, 15 years ago? You know what Rabbi Yishmael is saying? He rejects Rome and everything that Rome stands for. It's a cry it's a battle cry against Rome. I'm going to show you other Mishnayos. As we learn, I'm going to show you other Mishnayos where the Mishnayos is not just sending a sweet, lovely, good, frum message. It's a cry. I have a fellow came on Aliyah about a year or two ago. Somebody was a student of mine 20 years ago here in Eretz Yisrael. He sends me books. Whatever he feels his rabbi has to read, I get it in the mail. And it's 2 days ago, I got this one. Islam and Dehimitude. By the way, are you aware, each and every one of you, are you aware that you are Dehimis? You know you're a Dehimi?
You know that?
You're a Dehimi. I'm going to tell you exactly what a Dehimi is. This is the whole book. I mean, there are many books, but this one is very good. In the Muslim religion, there are Muslims. Every non-Muslim has a din dehimi. He's an infidel. He's an infidel. That includes Jews, Christians, of course, are infidels. The halacha is that a dehimi is not allowed to stand in front of a Muslim and look at him. They are I'll just read a few sentences, but there's a whole book. It's unbelievable. I read this. I mean, we have to know who we are dealing with in this world. Dehimi behavior. How dehimis are supposed to behave. Honey, you understand? You're going to learn now how to behave.
It's all from Quran?
Huh?
It comes from
the Quran and all the poskim that came afterwards.
Okay.
There's the Torah Sheba'al Peh that came afterwards. The law required from dehimis a humble demeanor, eyes lowered, a hurried pace. You walk quickly. You shuffled. You couldn't look. You don't look a Muslim straight in the face. Would they have ever said v'hadein mekabel as kol ha'adam v'simcha? Look somebody in the face with joy and happiness. What are you talking about? They had to wait. The chaga. They had the himis had to give way to Muslims in the street. Remain standing in their presence and keep silent, only speaking to them when given permission. They were forbidden to defend themselves if attacked, or to raise a hand against a Muslim on pain of having it amputated. Any criticism of the Quran and Islamic law annulled the protection pact. In addition, the Dehimi was duty-bound to be grateful, since it was Islamic law that spared its life. The whole corpus of these practices, and the description here is hardly exhaustive, formed an unchanging behavior pattern which was perpetuated from generation to generation for centuries. It was so deeply internalized that it escaped critical evaluation and invaded the realm of self-image, which was henceforth dominated by conditioning and self-evaluation. You don't have to understand what it says. But this is to your soul. This is how they look at others. Could a Muslim ever have said the sweet, lovely words of Rabbi Yishmael? Would a Christian have included Jews in the Hevei Mekabel as Kol Ha'adam B'Simcha? And by the way, Rabbi Yishmael is obviously referring as Kol Ha'adam. He doesn't use the term Re'echa. He doesn't use the term Yisrael. He doesn't use the term Dati Lumi or Haredi. Hevei Mekabel is Kol Ha'adam B'Simcha. And obviously, it will be elaborated on by Rabbi Akiva, who's going to say, Chaviv Adam, Shinibra B'Tselem. I mean, it's a whole different outlook. The outlook of Rabbi Yishmael was revolutionary, not only in his days, it's revolutionary today. It's revolutionary today. By the way, I'm ready to say that it's a shtickle revolutionary in our society. Even in our society over here, there are levels of elite. There's 5% of the country that maybe runs the whole country. There are the powerful, there are the mighty, there are the wealthy. The rest of us are like, you know, you can sit there in your miklat in Sderot or up in Metula. They're not, there are no Kassamim or Katyusha in Tel Aviv. Rabbi Yishmael is saying, making a powerful statement. I'm going to give you other examples. I'll give you one, for example. There's a Mishnah earlier. Rabbi Hanina, Skan HaKohanim, Rabbi Hanina, who was the assistant to the Kohanim, said, Hevei mitpalel b'shlomo shel malchus. You should pray for the peace of the government. She'il mali mo'ra'a. Because if not for fear of the government, ish et re'ehu, a man, his friend, chayim below, would swallow him up alive. I hope one of these days we'll get to that mission, but I'll tell you how the Mepharshim learn each and every word. Rabbi Hanina, of all the strange things, he was the assistant Kohen Gadol. But he's called Rabbi Hanina Sgan, the assistant HaKohanim of plural. Now wait a minute, you know, you don't remain a Sgan forever. You know, at some point when the Kohen Gadol either retires, you know, I don't know if Kohanim ever did that, but either retires or dies, so the Sgan takes over. But no, he was living in second Bet HaMikdash Eretz Yisrael, where the high priest of the Kohuna Gedola was But, you understand, it wasn't a matter of who is worthy. It was a matter of who was worth enough to buy it. In other words, there was corruption. There was a corrupt system. And he was a victim of this corrupt system. That's why Rabbi Chanina is Sgan HaKohanim. He is the assistant to many Kohanim Gadolim. And you know what he says? You have to pray for the peace of government. This same government that because of this government, Rabbi Chanina is the one who never achieves what by right he should have achieved in his life, but he understands that you need government because without government there will be chaos. What kind of chaos, he says? Ish. Ish means a man of substance, a good man. Esreyehu. Reyehu means his good friend. Chayim below would swallow him up alive. Do you understand? There's evil that lurks in the minds of people. If there is no, if there would be no government, if there would be no law and order, your best friend. And swallowing up means you don't even enjoy eating them up. You swallow, you don't even enjoy it. Rabbi Chanina is taking a look at human nature. At human nature. We need government, even if it's bad government, even if it's rotten government, as long as they maintain law and order, as long as they maintain law and order. Rabbi Chanina, Sgan HaKohanim, is talking about the realities of where he lived, just like Rabbi Yishmael. It's not just sweet, isn't it so nice? What a nice mission. Have you called a rose for Noach with your shoulder? That they would come out and call her out on the simcha. What a powerful statement, a rejection of everything that Rome stood for. A rejection, for that matter, of so many societies since the dawn of civilization. That's what Rabbi Shmuel was talking about. And Rabbi Shmuel knew exactly what he was saying and to whom. And the Romans knew it. It was not for naught that Rabbi Shmuel was put to death by the... by the Romans. Right. Next Mishnah. Here we're going to begin with Rabbi Akiva. Oh, Rabbi Akiva, we're going to have to spread out the story of Rabbi Akiva's life over a number of weeks. Rabbi Akiva's life is unbelievable story. Raman says it in his introduction to the Mishnah in general. The Raman says that Rabbi Akiva came from a family of converts. His father Yosef, he was Akiva ben Yosef, his father Yosef was a Ger Tzedek. The Gemara in the Sanhedrin says, Mi b'nei bonov shel Sisra, grandchildren of Sisra. That's where Rabbi Akiva came from. You understand? If Sisra would have known that that's the kind of goyish and nachas he's going to have, that one of his children is going to be, one of his grandchildren is going to be the pillar of all of Torah Sheva Al Peh, the entire oral law, he would have committed suicide before Yael killed him with the stake. That's nachas for a goyish Sinei Yisrael. That's what Rabbi Akiva was. Rabbi Akiva, in fact, when I say the pillar of Torah Sheba'al Peh, I mean that's not just some kind of compliment. The Gemara in Menachos tells the story that when Moshe Rabbeinu was in heaven, and Rabbi Yishmael showed him all of the generations to come, so he showed him a fellow by the name of Akiva ben Yosef, who was Dodesh Kol Tag Ba'os in Torah. So Moshe says to Rabbi Yishmael, what do you need me for? You should have given Torah through this Akiva ben Yosef. Gemara says, if not for Ezra and Rabbi Akiva, Torah would have been forgotten from Klal Yisrael. In other words, when it says Moshe Kivel Torah Misina Yimusoto Yeshua and gave it to Yeshua and Yeshua to the Zakedim, etc., when it came finally to Yanshe Knesset Hagdola, from them it went through the first perek in Pirkei Avos, Rebbeinu to Shimon HaTzadik and Antignus Yisocho, and then the Zugos, the pairs, Yosef ben Yoezer, Yosef ben Yochanan, Yerushalayim, Shimon ben Shatach, Yehuda ben Tabai, Hillel ben Shammai, all of the generations, and the fact is, till it comes to Rebbe Akiva. Rebbe Akiva is the one whose students were the ones who, under his tutelage, they were the ones who compiled the Mechilta, the Sifra, the Sifri, the Tanaidic Medrashe Halacha. Rebbe Akiva was the pillar of Torah Shebaal Peh. And we're going to talk, there's a great deal more to say about Rebbe Akiva. Because most probably one of the greatest things that can be said about Rebbe Akiva is that despite the fact, and this is going to be very significant in our understanding of Rabbi Akiva, despite the fact that he presided over one of the worst catastrophes in Jewish history, he was never blamed for it. Klal Yisrael never held it against him. Rabbi Akiva is the one who said about Bar Kochba, Tein Malko Mashiach, he's Melech Mashiach. We're gonna describe Rabbi Akiva was a journey throughout the world. There are at least 11 different places throughout Asia Minor and Africa, as far as France, all sorts of places in Africa. Rabbi Akiva journeyed to all of these communities for what? You know what he journeyed for? He journeyed in order to raise funds and support for the ultimate rebellion against Rome. He took them out on this adventure that had succeeded for 2.5 years. Bar Kokhba was able to rout the Romans. He established a Malchus in Yerushalayim. They minted coins, the coins of Bar Kokhba, and then 2.5 years after it all began, Rome regrouped, brought in its forces, and crushed brutally the rebellion. 500,000 Jews were slaughtered by the Romans. And of course Rabbi Akiva was put to death. So someplace was a new kippur, and I think in Sicilia, Caesarea. There's no place. No place where Rabbi Akiva is condemned. Look at what he did. I'm afraid what would happen if Rabbi Akiva would be living in our time. You said it's not going to be. You rabbis, you led us down the garden path. It's not going to be. Holyolo Yehiyeh. I assume in part, just at least to explain in some way now, the rebellion against Rome had to take place. Whichever way you would look at it, there was no future for the Jewish people. They were being crushed by Rome. They'll be crushed one way or crushed another way. At least there's a chance, maybe we may yet be able to vanquish the Romans. The Rambam says it. Then it would have succeeded. There was a sin. There was a certain sense of kochi v'yotzen yadi that was expressed by Bar Kokhba. Anyway, here it is: this the great rebellion and the great catastrophic, tragic loss on Rabbi Akiva. Image totally untainted. He remains the carrier of all of the Masorah, all of Torah Shabbat. So let's begin the Mishnayos of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Schok v'kalos rosh margilin le'erva. Schok v'kalos rosh. It may very well be that, you know, Rabbi Yishmael had said at the end of his Mishnah, you should receive everybody with joy. Rabbi Akiva is saying, there's a little point beyond joy, happiness. If you cross that line, you're moving into extremely, extremely dangerous territory. Beyond simcha comes a certain lightheadedness, schok, Kalut, a mockery, what?
Kalut
Rosh. Kalut Rosh. Not like heavy Kalut Rosh, but Kalut Rosh. There's a certain lightheadedness, and there's a certain schok, you understand. The schok can be understood as something that things are not taken seriously. You don't take people seriously. You reach a certain point, and by some people it happens when they've had a few drinks. They don't take people seriously. They don't take conventions seriously. The kind of things that they wouldn't do under other circumstances, they do when they are under the influence. Under the influence. The influence does not necessarily have to be alcohol. It may be a frame of mind. Frame of mind. Kalut Rosh, Margila Le'eva, brings to immorality. Brings to immorality. I mean, do I have to talk about immorality? Here, we're living in a city that's under a horrible cloud of a 10-day convention of a gay parade. That's the ultimate Kalut Rosh and Skok. That's the ultimate erva of all. And sort of like, they throw it at you. I have to know your sexual preferences. You have to tell me this bechavim in the holy streets of Yerushalayim, Shavu Yerushalayim Hazos. It's all part of, I don't care. Let it all hang out. That's a schok of a kalus rosh that's destructive of the morality of a human being. And then of course, you know, God, this morning, I tell you, I'm so depressed. Here there was an article this morning by a rabbi, quotation marks, why he and his wife and his grandson or granddaughter and his daughter-in-law, why they're going to march side by side in the gay parades, or the Ebishtahapi, you understand? The Rabbi Kelman, that's how his father is turning over in his grave right now, you understand? This is the great filth that has to be brought to the streets of Yerushalayim. Sick people walking through the streets of Yerushalayim proud. That's Kalus Chosh. It's schok. It's laughing at everybody. Laughing in everybody's face. Not serious. Schok the Kalus Rosh, Maragilun Le'erva. We're going to have to come back to this. It accustoms a person to Erva. It brings one into immorality. And once you break down the barriers, once you break down the fences, anything's going to happen. I use that term very carefully, because the rest of the Mishnah is going to be talking about fences. We know so much about walls in this country. This way the wall, that way the wall here, the wall there. This great wall, the great wall of Eretz Yisrael is going to protect us, you understand. It's going to protect us. Masoret Siyog LaTorah. Masoret Siyog LaTorah. When you hear those three words, what is the immediate association? What's the immediate memory association that comes from Masoret Siyog LaTorah? It has to take you back. It has to take you back to the first mission in Pirkei Avos. Moshe kibel Torah miSinai umisara liYoshua, and Yoshua gave it over to the elders. The elders gave it over to the Nevi'im. The Nevi'im gave it over to the Anshei Knesset Hagdolah, the men of the great assembly. Hen Heim Amru. They said three things. They said, "Havei Metunim Badin, be careful in passing judgment. Ha'amidu Tamidim Harvei, establish, raise many students." Ba'asu siyog la'Torah. Make a siyog, a fence, a protection for Torah. Torah needs to be protected. Why did the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah say that? You know why the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah said it? Because the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah had living experience. Jews had spent less than 70 years in Bavel, and there was already intermarriage. Ezra and Nehemiah talk about it. Families that came back, you know, from the Olim yet, from the Olim. The sum total of 42,000 Olim that came back and millions left behind in Babel. There was intermarriage, you understand? Lo Yehuman, there was intermarriage. The Chaman says they couldn't talk a straight sentence in Hebrew. That's why Anshe Knesset Agdola had to compose a Shmona Esrei so that everybody should be able to know how to daven. They didn't know how to daven. They couldn't say a straight sentence in Hebrew. By the way, it's a problem today too. Our youth don't know Hebrew. Well, we thought that, you know, they're great in Lashon Kodesh. They don't know Tanakh. They don't know Hebrew. It's a Shana Nachata. They caught Olmert by a mistake, a grammatical mistake. So he made some speech about the importance of teaching Hebrew. That's right. Okay. Anyway, so therefore the Anshei Knesset Agdolah saw, took a look what happened in 70 years of Golus Babel. For over 900 years during the period from Yahushua until the destruction of the first Beth Hamikdash, Jews had not mixed or mingled with any other people. Their first contact after close to 1,000 years with foreign cultures and different people were when they came into exile in Babel in 70 years, already made a churban, so that they understood that they have to build fences, they have to erect barriers. Therefore, they made the halacha that you're not allowed to drink the wine of a guy. There was an issa for many years on bread that was baked by a guy. There was an issa on oil. Later, the Gemara says that it was a gzeira that the tzibur could not accept. So therefore, Rebbe was matter oil. The idea of pas akum, so that remains in the Shulchan Aruch, even though it's mutter to eat pas akum, bread baked by a guy, as long as you know that it's kosher, it's mutter. So it says in Shulchan Aruch that during Aseret Yemei Tshuva, good to eat and didn't eat goyish bread on the Aseret Yemei Tshuva. Of course, we don't have a problem with it. We live in the age of angels and vermins, angels and vermins, what do you talk about? He understood that Masoret is Siyog LaTorah. Torah needs a protective wall about it. What is the Masoret that he's talking about? The protective wall that he's talking about is Torah Shebaal Peh. This is Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva is the Masorah. He carries Torah Shebaal Peh on his shoulders. He is the one that gives it over to his students. As we mentioned earlier, all the main works from which Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi afterwards, some 50 years afterwards, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi composed the Mishnah, it came mainly from the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva, and of course Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva themselves. How many times Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael appear? Masoret Siyog LaTorah. Let's read the rest of the Mishnah quickly, and then we will we'll of course have to get back to it. Masoret Siyog LaTorah. Masrot Siyog LaOsher. And there's going to be a lot of pshatah on this Mishnah. Mm-hmm. Masrot, giving the tenth that one is supposed to give to the Levi, is a siyog. Now, the word siyog has to be understood not only a fence, something protective, something that strengthens wealth. I mean, one would have thought that, you know, if I don't give my sir, and I hoard all my money for myself, so I'm going to be rich. Along comes Rabbi Akiva, and he says, no, it's not so. It's precisely the opposite. Maisers, giving tzedakah, is siyog, strengthens one's wealth. And there's the famous Gemara, Long Tainus, that says, aser to aser, tithe you shall tithe, tenth you shall tenth, aser, you should give maiser v'shvil shetit asher, in order that you become wealthy. Nedarim siyog l'prishus, nedarim. There are times that a person is absolutely justified, and there are times at which it is recommended, though as a general principle not, but it depends on the situation and on the person. A neder to make a vow, I promise, I take a vow, I swear, I will not do such and such, is something that strengthens a person's perishus, a sense of his being separated from Avera. It adds a dimension of Kedusha. Siyog l'chofma, the wall, or that which strengthens wisdom, is silence. Somebody once said, silence is golden. I told you in my yearbook, and I graduated elementary school from Tarvadas, Shiva Tarvadas. I think it was 1948. So you know, they put out a yearbook. It was called The Scroll. They have a picture, and under the picture of each graduate, they had a sentence over there. And under my picture, they wrote, "Silence is golden." Nobody would ever believe it. I was a very quiet boy. I was shy. I was laid back. I was very introverted. My wife says she doesn't believe a word. She doesn't believe a word.
So what happened?
I said this in a shiur that I put out on disc, and somebody in the Phil Chinosky, he listened to this disc where I described the fact how what a silent young man I was. So he printed out on his computer, "Silence is golden." But gold certainly isn't silent. That now, that's good, huh? That adorns my fridge right now. If you ever come into the house, you take it to the fridge, and there it is. So, coming attractions, the things that we're going to have to talk about is, we have to understand the symmetry. For at the end of the Mishnah, it's clear that something switched over here. It should have said, Shtika Syog Lachachma. Just like it said, Masodet Syog LaTorah, Ma'asrot Syog LaOsher, Nidorim Syog LaPrishus. What should it have said? It should have said, Shtika Syog Lachachma. That's not. It switches at the end, and it says Syog Lachachma Shtika. Alright? Now, the symmetry is not. It is out of place, not only at the end, but of course the beginning of the Mishnah also is not symmetrical. The beginning of the Mishnah was that Schok and Kalut Rosh Margilin Le'erva. One could have said it in a completely different way. That Kovet Rosh, seriousness, is Syog Le'erva. Right? Or Syog LaKedusha, whichever. No, it could all have been said in the same manner that the rest of the Mishnah. The fact that the first statement in the Mishnah and the last statement are different than the other two is something that we have to explain. Because there should be a symmetry. Obviously, Rabbi Akiva had something very significant in mind. So, Yet Hashem, that we will talk about not next Tuesday night, but the Tuesday night following that, Gesundheit. We have a lot to say. Yes, Hashem, Gesundheit. We'll learn as much as we can.
Taco Baruch. It worked. It worked. Everything worked.
No, in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're in trouble, everything works.
No, I thought I was ready to throw one of them out.
Is there a special bracha for him?
I don't know what the bracha is. I don't know.